Julie, I've known you for at least 22 years now. And so I've grown away from certain, I guess, stereotypes that I used to have when I would hear you or someone else talk about paying attention to God or paying attention to what's sacred inside. But I want to say what those stereotypes are and ask you to, you know, relieve others of them in case anyone has them. I used to think that what that meant was I needed to run a thought tape through my mind where I was thinking explicitly about God or sacred things all the time. And I thought I had to be very staid and quiet and kind of suppressed in certain ways, which all turned out not to be true. But I don't think I'm the only person who goes there. And so I just wanted to ask you, you know, to make that distinction even more, that that's not what you're suggesting. You're not suggesting people have a prescription of proper thoughts and behaviors that they micromanage themselves around.
No, I'm not suggesting thinking at all. I'm suggesting something that's much better than thinking, which is being. No, I've said at least, you know, a number of times today, the mind is overworked. That's not the place to go deeper. So what does being mean? Well, it means being quiet. It means taking a moment to feel what's going on inside you. But it doesn't mean having particular thoughts. That's not a program for thinking. So the dimension of depth is not about thoughts. The dimension of depth is about the heart and about the soul. It's about what you care about. It would be as if I were to say to you, have a sacred life, live the life you care about. Let yourself care more, embrace more what you care about. That's the avenue towards living a sacred life. It's not about thinking at all, really. I mean, you can think about it, but that's not the place that I'm speaking about. So thank you for asking that.
Please distinguish longing versus desire.
How do you distinguish it? It means something particular to you, so say something, and then I'll say something too. Why is that a question?
I had a very deep relationship with a woman, and 6 months ago we broke up. And I've had a few relationships in my lifetime, but this one is different in that thoughts of her, not thoughts, but just images. My heart is just very open for her. I know it's not possible. Well, nothing's impossible, but in all likelihood, it will not happen this lifetime to be with her. And I've been able to let go of things very easily for the most part in my life. I cannot let go of this. It's not a choice. It just keeps on coming back to me. Often. And it's a deep longing for her, to be with her. I don't think it's desire because it's almost always here in my heart. But the other part of this question is I feel like I have a very strong connection with spirit, God, whatever you want to call it. And I'm wondering if this is a hindrance for me, although you said all obstacles are on this path. Not that I have a choice at the moment. I don't try to control myself. Whatever appears, appears. And what's appearing for 6 months is just my heart is just bursting open and I cry a lot. And I guess I don't think it's a desire. I think it's more longing for the sacred within her, which is my thought is it's whether it's her or just theoretical spirit, or is it the same?
Here's a question, and I think you have your own answer to it, but I'm going to respond to your question with a question which I'm going to answer. How do you know you love someone? How do you know? Well, the thing about love is, you know when you feel it. It's something that's built into your heart that feels like it's in your heart. It doesn't feel like it's somewhere else. So we have a way of feeling varieties of love, varieties of depth of love, varieties of kinds of love. And they're all real, and we sometimes get separated from the certainty that we're experiencing love because we're not that conversant with our heart. But really, your heart knows what love is. It really does. It feels love as love. So you are feeling the loss of a loved one, as many do who have had a deep connection with another soul that they feel adjoining with on many levels, on the physical level, on the emotional level, and on the soul level. And when you have adjoining on the soul level, and it doesn't mean that you're a partner with that person, you could be, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, but when you have adjoining that is somebody you've met on the soul level, and you feel love on these various different ways, then the lack of possibility for that to manifest becomes a source of ache and in grief. And then you have to find within yourself the way to separate love from grief, which is your task right now. What you're involved with is separating love from grief so that your love can continue, but the need to have life be different doesn't remain such an aching pain for you. Basically, you're doing exactly what you need to be doing. You're letting the grief of the loss of this soul take its course, and there really isn't something else that you can do except to know that you can, this is in principle, you can have a deep soul relationship of joining on the soul level with someone that you're not meant to be with in this lifetime. And then you have to go through this letting go, which is what you're doing, and bearing the grief of it, and trying to pray about it, and letting go, and praying about it, and letting it take its course. It would be the same if you had lost someone to death. It would be the same kind of passage. So what you're doing is what you need to be doing. Thank you.
What have you found fruitful as appetizers to inspire hunger?
Say it again. Appetizers to what?
Inspire hunger. What have you found most fruitful as appetizers to inspire hunger?
I have to reverse your question to answer it. Hunger doesn't require an appetizer. What's acting as a suppressant is what needs to be removed. Hunger is part of the becoming of who you are. So if you're assuming that something is needed in order for you to feel your hunger, that I understand. But the thing that takes away the awareness of hunger is something in you or in somebody that's not allowing you to know what it is you're really longing for. The suppression of the actual knowledge of what you're longing for can create a lack of awareness of where is my hunger. Am I addressing what you asked, or are you still looking for appetizers?
How do you invite someone from the measurable house of doing into the immeasurable house of being?
This discussion tonight is all about that. And so you need more of an invitation? Is that what you're saying? Or you're speaking about somebody else?
Anybody. About anybody.
Okay.
You offer this.
Okay. When you look at the question about the new year that I raised at the very beginning, what is your life about? What are you doing here? What is your purpose? What did you do last year? What do you want to do next year? These are all questions that can be answered at different levels of depth. When you assume that there's more to you than your work, than your studies, than whatever you're doing for your vacation, than your habits, you begin a search for your deeper being. It happens by itself when you try to answer the question, what am I doing here? That's the invitation. The embodied self begins to look for its purpose. That's built into the program. The embodied self begins to look for its purpose. And if it doesn't begin, if it's not beginning, well, then it's not time yet, because then life is being lived in a more surface way, which can go on for a long time. But once you get tired of life being lived in a surface way, your own inner being takes you down the road by asking the question, what are you doing here? What is your life about? Nothing external. It's your own self, your own soul, that's going to present that question to you. And if it hasn't, or if we're talking about someone else, then it's because that person is not yet ready to go deeper, which is okay too. You don't need anything else except yourself and your own deeper hunger to know your purpose, your being, that's going to take you to it. Okay? All right.
Okay, so when you start seeing the patterns of childhood that you keep repeating over and over again, and as I see very clearly one that I am doing yet again, what's a good way of letting go without getting to that point where we're stuck and we get angry at ourselves and say, oh God, I've done it again, and here I am being stuck. And I found that doing some yoga physically helped me to, let go, move forward. But I suppose there's no magic pill. I guess I want a magic pill to just, like, move beyond that. That's the path. We have to go through that and sooner.
Could you say something that would take it down to a specific a little bit more so I know what you're talking about when you say stuck? Stuck is a very common word. What's the context that you're using? Of what's...
I fall in love with a man that I cannot have.
And that's...
Oh, this is like my father, who's unavailable. Oh, yeah. There's that unavailability thing. So it's like, oh, what a fool I am to have done this again to myself. But it's like, wait a minute. If I'm programmed from childhood patterns to do this, now I can choose a different way. But between the choosing a new way and the old way, there's that in-between gushy stuff of this part doesn't want to let go, but this part is like, hey, there's this new way of doing things. So I'm assuming patience. I just have to be patient and just go through this whole organic mess until we get to this nice, happier way of being. But I guess I should be happy now too, so I don't know.
No, I don't think patience is the only answer, but I think removing yourself from the psychological landscape is part of the issue. If we try to answer relationship issues on a psychological level, especially with reference to past experiences with childhood families and so on, we go in a loop often about that, about the explanations, the cause. It's all intellectually very clear, but it doesn't help us get out of it. No, you need to shift levels. And when I say shift levels, it depends on what you're holding to be true. We haven't talked, I haven't talked tonight. I've talked about the sacred. Well, I haven't talked about light. But if you move out of the psychological frame of reference altogether, then you're just dealing with who you are. Who are you as a being? Who are you and what are you doing here? It's what I said to him. If you can pull yourself away from going in that loop of psychological explanations, which become very intellectualized and don't do you a lot of good, go to the more important question. Who are you in relation to God? Who are you as a soul? Who are you in this life? There's something about calling upon the divine as an identity reference and removing yourself from that psychological matrix that begins to move energy. Now, I wasn't talking about light tonight, but moving out of that frame of reference into the sacred frame of reference, you begin to move energy which begins to break up the pattern. So you're not thinking about it, you're doing something to change the configuration that started the pattern in the first place. If somebody, you or someone else, is doing that and has spent years in therapy or elsewhere with that feeling, and some therapy is very helpful, but some is becomes an intellectual exercise and you go round and round with it. You need to consider the possibility that you're looking for an answer at the wrong place and go to the other level where the energetic change in your consciousness and in your body can actually start to break up those crystallized patterns. That's the language of light that I'm speaking. But for you, in this moment, there is a way besides being patient, and the way is what I've been talking about. Thank you.
I'm trying to embrace the time.
I'm sorry, but you said you have kind of a question. What makes it kind of a question?
Well, what I'm struggling with, I have to constantly remind myself to do that because I get distracted, and that was part of what you were saying earlier. And I get distracted by life, job, whatever, busyness, and I have to constantly remind myself to do that. Come back. And so I don't know if that's a question or how do you do it easily? It seems like I'm constantly doing it.
How to do it easily? How to not get distracted? Here's a simple response to what you're asking, and it's not really simple. It goes back to what I said about motivation and longing. Believe it or not, people get distracted because they want to get distracted. And you answer your question by not wanting to get distracted, but by wanting something else. This is one of the principles of change that's very important. Change, I spoke about longing, but this is a different version of it. Change occurs when an old motivation gets replaced by a new motivation that's stronger. So, if you have a motivation, let's say, to play video games, I'm not saying that's you, but if one does, or if you have a motivation to drive fast, or if you have a motivation to eat more than is good for you or something, you know, that's just all part of your old habit pattern. So in this way of looking at things, we're looking at things from a sacred standpoint. Old motivations are let go of when a new motivation that's stronger, say, stronger than your desire to get distracted, comes into being. And when I think you know this. When you really want to change and not get distracted, then what you need is to allow love to be more important than everything else. I know you know this. When you allow love, really, really, not just the word love, but your actual daily immersion in it to be more important, that anchors you daily, moment to moment, more so. So to give up the attraction to getting distracted, you have to have another motivation that becomes stronger. And for you, it's love.
That's actually
it. Thank you.
The fact that I'm actually choosing distraction.
Yes. Well, this is the thing about habits. People feel that they're in the grip of habits, but really that they're holding on to them. You think something is holding on to you, but you're holding on to it. That's the whole story. One more question? Anybody?
I have a question. I find myself like Whenever I'm waking up from sleeping, like I'm sleeping in a deep sleep, I always hear myself praying before I wake up. I can hear myself praying, and that's happened like about maybe it happened about 2 hours before I really wake up. I've been just praying in my sleep, and I can hear myself praying in the sleep, going from prayer to prayer. I don't know how to ask this question, but that is what happens to me. So I just like, you know, have an idea what is really going on.
What's going on is you're accessing a different part of your consciousness that's not available to you during your waking state. Your consciousness is not gone when you're asleep. It's doing other things. Most people experience dreaming as what's happening. This that you're talking about is not dreaming. This is another part of you. You have layers of consciousness. We all do, layers. So you're sensing what you're actually doing in another part of yourself. Another part of you is praying all the time while the physical part of you is sleeping. You're having a relationship when you hear your prayers with another part of your own being. It's beautiful. I'm going to bring things to a close now. I'd like to say a prayer before I close. I'd like to pray that what we share today, what we speak about, what we think about the truth of who we are, the truth of our deeper being, the truth of our being divine beings, can become accessible to all. That all beings can become more aware of who they are in this sense of being sacred, being worthy, being connected with all that is. So let's pray silently together in this moment for all beings to experience themselves as sacred and as divinely connected with all that is, that they may feel truth, recognize truth, and no longer feel separate or alone. We pray for all beings, especially for those who feel separate and alone and uncared for on this last night of 2016. May all beings be blessed by the truth. Amen.